The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning. Thanks so much for being here. We do appreciate it. Busy day. What will the new news bring on the whole situation about the news stories out of Chicago about Jussie? Oh, I forgot his last name.
Smollett.
Smollett, the actor, and what we're finding out from the reports from CBS in Chicago yesterday. Yesterday afternoon into the evening, that one of the reasons, one of the motivations that he did it was that there wasn't enough outrage about the piece of hate mail that he had received a few days earlier. That he wasn't satisfied with the amount of outrage for that. And then the CBS report that police also confiscated stamps and a magazine. And the interesting thing was the hate mail that was sent to Mr. Smollett was done by cutting letters out of a magazine. And so that gets to the next point is, are they implying that police are investigating that everything surrounding this was put together by Mr. Smollett? Is that what they're indicating? That the piece of hate mail to begin with was done by him and the brothers? Have the brothers told that to police? You and I both said last Thursday morning or Thursday night, Friday morning in our show, that they arrested the brothers without filing any charges. And at that point, you and I both said, we're going to know whether this thing's a hoax in the next 24 to 48 hours. And it wasn't even 12 hours later that we knew that it was that we knew that, you know, at that point, the brothers had, you know, testified, according to sources, that, nope, this was all Mr. Smollett's doing. He is the one that thought it up. That the hate attack, and this is what we found out also, that there was actually an attack that was staged.
Yeah, right.
It was all, it was staged.
Rehearsed.
And then staged where they actually, you know, maybe they didn't beat him up, but, you know, they had the bleach and everything else there that you think about it. I mean, this took time and energy to do. And if the letter, if the initial letter is also part of it, you and I talked about that, you know, the serious charge there. Because you can actually make the case that that is a terrorist threat. Could you not? Because, again, yeah, it may have gone to him. But the people around him, when he opened it up, because if it was actually mailed, and they mailed it, and it went, you know, to the studios. And I don't know if he opened it up first or somebody else opened up that up first. What's the difference between sending any type of terrorist letter? So, I mean, there's some possible serious charges here if that all comes to be. And I know the discussion over the weekend was, you know, the mainstream media trying to downplay it. And, you know, we need to wait till all the information comes out. I love that
one. Yeah, they didn't say that early on with the other version of this story. TMZ posted 10 minutes ago that his role on Empire, according to their sources, has been slashed significantly. That in one of the episodes being shot right now, that some of the key scenes from that episode that he was in have been cut out, including a musical number, and that the scenes that remain are with an ensemble, which means he would be blended in with other members of the cast. Again, this is from TMZ just 10 minutes ago that they posted this story.
Well, you and I had seen the Drudge Report where it said, that the Fox studio stands behind him. And you and I both saw that yesterday and went,
No, that's the old story.
And from, and we both looked Thursday, at it. We all looked at it and went, yeah. "What do you? They're saying it this weekend?" And we looked, and that was dated the 14th.
Yeah, again, this came across 10 minutes ago there at TMZ, and they have been on this, and they're the ones also saying that their police sources tell them that the case here, the hoax case, could be heading to a grand jury as soon as today, later today, Tuesday. So if that's the case, then you're going to have a we'll know very quickly. I'm wondering too that if it's true that the police have this information and they have plenty of proof to charge him with a hoax, then at some point he and his lawyers have to be wanting to work out a deal. You're not going to fight something like this in court. Because if you do and it plays out in court and you lose, it goes on and on and on. I'm not saying it's not going to be a career ender anyway, but that would definitely be a career ender. But how many people in Hollywood even want to have this associated with any of their productions? If you believe you can't trust a person.
No, his career is... if he does a plea bargain, he's going to have to plead guilty to something. His career is over.
Yeah, and if you go through the courts and you let a trial go on, it's over anyway.
Yeah, well, the thing is, what prosecutors would want, if they wanted a deal, he would have to admit in court exactly what he did before they allowed him to do the deal.
Yep.
What, you know, you're going to have to be clear. Now, Kamala Harris, I love this. Hmm? Democratic presidential candidate Kamala Harris appeared to be caught off guard Monday when she was asked about the latest developments in the alleged attack on Empire actor Jussie Smollett during an appearance at a bookstore in Concord, New Hampshire. Is this, wait a minute, was this before or after the reporters had helped her with her fashion show? During an appearance, you heard about that, mm-hmm, right? The reporters helping her shop for clothes. Mm. During you want media bias? There it is right there. Being actively involved in it. During an appearance at a bookstore in Concord, New Hampshire, a female reporter asked the senator from California if she wanted to amend a tweet from January 29th in which she said Smollett was a victim of an attempted modern-day lynching and called the actor one of the kindest, most gentle human beings I know. Harris also used the Smollett attack to push legislation that would make lynching a federal hate crime. What tweet? Harris asked. As a reporter specified the tweet in question, Harris appeared to look around for a campaign staffer before responding. Okay, so I will say this about the case. I think that the facts are still unfolding.
Yes, right. Yeah.
And I'm very, those ums are in quotes, mm-hmm, concerned about, obviously, the initial allegation that he made about what might have happened. And it's something that we all should take seriously whenever anyone alleges that kind of behavior. But then there should be an investigation. And I think that once the investigation has concluded, then we can all comment.
Yes.
But I'm not going to comment until I know the outcome of the investigation.
Right. Yeah. Well, then I'm sorry. Why the tweet on January 29th?
Whoa.
Yeah. Let's jump to a conclusion. Then when it's not working in our favor, oh, let's wait. By the way, it doesn't work. I've seen some comments, you know, the conservative media is gleeful. I'm not gleeful. I think this is tragic. If this is a hoax, it doesn't make me happy at all.
It's number one, it's tragic because it terrified a neighborhood for no reason at all.
Right.
It has the potential to harm the credibility of somebody who actually is a victim, mm-hmm, of a hate crime later on down the road when there isn't a lot of evidence up front to their allegation. Mm-hmm. It helps destroy it. I think one of the things that comes out of it that at least is instructional if all these, if everything that we hear from the source stories and everybody is reporting, you know, what direction the story is going into, and none of it is favorable towards Jussie Smollett at all, none of it. But it shows the degree that pure raw hatred can drive people to. And, you know, this was said early on that when you continually, when the entertainment media, when the media, when politicians refer to a to somebody, another politician, the president of the United States, for example, as a fascist, as Hitler. Remember the message that you're communicating. When you say somebody is truly a Hitler or a fascist. Now, maybe it's different for young people. I don't know. I don't know how somebody who is 25 years old views it if you call somebody else a Hitler. I know how somebody my age does. I know what the word fascist means and what it puts into people's minds. And all I know is that when you say it and you repeat it over and over and over and over again, what you tell people, what you're communicating to your audience, is that this person, this president, you can never deal with. You can never accept them. You cannot tolerate them. They must be removed from office. And there's no discussion on it. There's no discussion on their policies. Why? Because this person is the kind of person who will commit genocide. That's the message that you're sending. Not, I don't believe, for all that, that went on during the Obama administration, he wasn't born in America. How dare you deal with that kind of hate? Remember that, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's a racist statement. That's racist. That's racist. Now what do we have? The current president is a fascist. He's Hitler. And it's right. Said over and over and over again. And you see the Trump derangement system, or system, or, excuse me, symptoms that that causes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You see that. You see the anger. You see it. We've dealt with it. People call up and they're just screaming incoherently. They're losing it completely. The people, look, we get the emails. We understand it. I, you know, and to me, it's quite simple. Hey, every president that I know, I'll look at it times and go, what a jerk. Shouldn't have done that. Shouldn't have done that. Most politicians we say that about. It's one thing to dislike somebody and dislike their policies. But as we have said over, you know, overall, Trump is what? He's a moderate. On judicial selections, we'll see. Doesn't look like he is on judicial selections. But on the rest, he's really quite moderate. What he is proposing is all in the mainstream of American politics. None of it is outrageous. None of it is fascist. Before you say the Declaration of a National Emergency and executive order, example, Obama. And, you know, we used to get that about Obama all the time, too. He's a dictator. We had to tell our audience, no, he is not. He was duly elected by the people of the United States. You just don't like it. I don't like it. Doesn't make him a dictator. We did the same thing when Obama was in office.
Mm-hmm.
But the accusations were not that he was a Hitler and would commit genocide. He was a fascist and wanted all Americans who didn't agree with him dead. That's what you got. And not just from the fringe either. And so should we be surprised when some people have that kind of hatred, incoherent hatred, Trump derangement syndrome? I said symptom, sorry, syndrome. Should we be surprised? No.
No, I mean, if you're not getting the attention you want, if you're not getting if you're not shown, it really is a competition. We've said in 2020, the debate stage is going to be filled with people who are first going to have to prove that they, each one of them, is going to have to prove that they hate Trump more. And we're seeing that more and more. But that's playing out because that's exactly what activists are doing every single day. Here's a guy who had a starring role on a hit TV show. Still does for the moment. And decided that he needed more attention. If it's a hoax, that's the only reason he did that. And also to bring about fear in the hearts of other people, that's how he facilitated that in his own neighborhood.
Nobody is paying attention to my outrage of Trump.
Right. So I'll show you.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Cold weather can affect your batteries more than any other component on the vehicle. Pay attention to these maintenance tips that may help assure your batteries are equipped to roll through the rest of winter. A fully charged battery is one of the best defenses against cold weather. Have your batteries tested before your next trip to ensure they're able to handle cold early morning starts and in order to maximize their lifespan. Another tip is to make sure your batteries are clean. Dirty batteries can discharge at a faster rate when the truck is idle. Dirt can also promote corrosion on terminals and connections, a problem that will only worsen in cold weather. Stop into a TA truck service near you to have your batteries charged and inspected for harmful debris today.
This maintenance tip is a service of TA Truck Service Road Squad. If you break down, we show up. Call 800-924-SHOP.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Turn on radio. He's Eric Carly. I'm Gary McNamara. Let's go to David in Glenwood Springs, Colorado. David, hi, on Andrew McCabe's interview with 60 Minutes. Hi, David. You're on Red Eye Radio.
Yeah, hey there, guys.
Hi.
Thanks, you know, for all you do and for giving me insomnia all the time because I just stay too entertained by hearing your logic all the time, you know, overnight.
Thanks.
But, yeah, really what I think we're seeing is panic in D.C. The bureaucrats, they're running for the hills with their tail between their legs. And not a whole lot of people do a lot of deep research and follow the news as obsessively as some others. But I remember when I saw a news report about McCabe facing a grand jury with the Huber investigation. And I'm sure that, you know, the way that President Trump operates, he has everything, you know, he moves like four moves ahead on a chessboard. And I'm quite sure that he had in mind and planned and had foreseen what McCabe would be facing. And right now, I think what we're seeing is the consequence of what he had to acknowledge and face up to during that grand jury.
Well, the only thing I would say is, and I don't know the timeline on it, but the only time where Trump really knew probably what was going on was just a couple of months ago when he actually got what was in the the FISA warrant application.
Mm-hmm.
Besides that, I don't know what you're talking about, that Trump would have been ahead four chess moves on the McCabe thing, because I don't think he knew precisely what was going on inside of the FBI. Again, we don't know what he knows now, because he knows what's actually in that the FISA warrant and those emails that he has. But I don't think public opinion has been on two sides of this. And I still think that the sides are still going to have Adam Schiff out there, as he was this past weekend, saying, oh, we've got the evidence against Trump. We've got evidence of collusion, without ever stating what they are. He's been doing that now for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And still did it this past weekend. So I don't think that public opinion is necessarily on the side of Trump yet.
No, I don't think he's won that in the public just yet.
No.
It's going to take some doing and some more information to come out.
They've got the goods. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Welcome and good morning. Well, Martina Navratilova in trouble now with the left.
Again.
Yep. She tweeted out, and I believe, when was it, back maybe in December? It was a while back, though, because we had covered it.
Mm-hmm.
And she tweeted out, she said, "You just can't proclaim yourself a female and be able to compete against women." Yeah, it was in December that she tweeted it. "There must be some standards, and having a penis and competing as a woman would not fit that standard." After intense blowback, Navratilova said she would have nothing more to say until she studied the issue more closely. This from William McGurn's column here in the Wall Street Journal, which is true. Well, she wrote in the Sunday Times of London, "Well, I've done that, and if anything, my views now have strengthened."
Not backing away.
Not backing away at all.
Well, because if the original points that were made, you would have to go back and say, well, those were all wrong and invalid. And ultimately, I don't know why you would need time to reconsider it. It's not like, she's a lawmaker in her 20s and talking about something that doesn't come with a lifetime experience. Well, she's talking when she first issued, her statement, when she first issued her opinion on it. I didn't say to myself, well, she's not thinking it through.
No.
She has a lifetime of experience that she's basing it on. And the points that she made, more importantly, I think, were the valid ones that we have talked about in the past. You have a number in the LGBTQ community that are saying, well, wait a minute. We're giving consideration to individuals, and we've pointed out time and time again, if someone can say they belong to a protected group along the way, at any point, you don't get to question that, then the protected groups disappear.
Well, she said she will not be deterred by the tyranny mm-hmm. of the transgender activist. Aren't going to engage in an argument, but and it's funny because I just read this portion now, and we had said this earlier, who simply will denounce you as transphobic,
right?
But actually will not debate the issue. And she said it's not going to deter me, but she's afraid that it will deter others from coming forward with it. You know, one of the problems that has come out with this, and remember, she came out back as gay back in 1981.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that we have talked about is what you're getting from the feminists out there. And by the way, we said this years ago was going to happen, was that feminists are coming out and saying, wait a minute, if you make this change, men aren't going to lose any jobs. Men aren't going to lose their spots on their team. Women are going to lose their spots on their team. And, here's one, for example, and McGurn talks about this in his column. In January, USA Powerlifting announced a prohibition on transgendered women on the sensible ground that theirs is a strength sport and allowing biological males to compete would not be fair. But common sense is no match for an ideology on the march. No sooner had USA Powerlifting announced its policy than it received a letter from Minnesota Representative Ilhan Omar saying that the sport was violating the Minnesota Human Rights Act. She was asking the state's attorney general to investigate. One of the best things brought up, though, is, and McGurn has this in his column in the Wall Street Journal, is Andrew Sullivan, the conservative commentator who was gay. Andrew Sullivan noted the surreal alliance in a recent essay for New York Magazine headlined The Nature of Sex. Mr. Sullivan's particular focus was a proposed Equality Act, which would add gender identity to the classes protected by the 1964 Civil Rights Act, But his main point about the implications of ignoring biological reality dovetails with Ms. Navratilova's argument about sports. Once biological reality is pushed aside, Mr. Sullivan writes, and remember, he's gay, it becomes hard to define exactly what a woman really is. The core of the traditional gay claim, he writes, is that there is indeed a very big difference between male and female, and that the difference matters, and without it, homosexuality would make no sense at all. Not only that, and this is beautiful. This is beautiful, the way he wrote this. If male and female are simply social constructs, the definitions that then prevail must rely on stereotypical ideas of what gender expression means, such as wearing dresses or nail polish. So he salutes the courage of gay women such as Ms. Navratilova, who are attacked for speaking up. I mean, that's a beautiful. I mean, that's a beautiful analysis of it. If anybody can be a male and female, then the only way that you can identify as a male and female is your gender expression, which is superficial, which is either a stereotype or cosmetic or fashion.
Yes. Completely superficial. Well, because, you know, we go back to the joint edicts from the Obama administration, Department of Education and Justice Department, telling schools, well, we believe that you could be violating a student's right if that student walks into the office tomorrow and says, I identify as this person now, of this gender and this name, you must honor it. You must honor that student's wish. Nowhere in the edict does it say the student must dress a certain way, look a certain way,
or do
anything else except declare it.
You and I have said this for the longest time. If you're somebody who is a civil rights activist, gay activist, that believes you're a civil rights activist, really the only place that really left for you, when you think about it politically, the only place that's going to be left for you is conservative libertarian ideals, where the government sort of stays out of it and says, look, let society decide what the morals are.
Right.
We as a government will not.
Right.
Society can figure that out itself. You don't need it dictated from the top. That really the libertarian mindset for so many on the left, the libertarian conservative mindset, is actually now a better option than the Democrat Party and liberalism.
Right.
That's why you and I talked about the liberal feminists that were at the Heritage. It was at the Heritage Foundation panel where they talked about what was going on with transgender activists, how women will be marginalized by the transgender activist movement. We said this. I can't remember how long ago, 5, 6, 7 years ago, you and I said on the show, adding the T to the LBGT, that the gay community will eventually come out and say this was a horrible mistake. I believe we were probably the first in the United States to make that statement, and now it is coming true.
Well, because there was no other way to go once each group was looking at what? Their life experience, and you're supposed to, we as a group are getting special attention or need special attention and or protection because of this. Well, once it becomes something where, like, well, what, remember the feminists who went after Bruce Jenner when Bruce became Caitlyn. Wait a minute. You didn't live your life as a woman. You didn't go through an entire lifetime of, you know, whatever it was, to, you know, to having your rights violated in this way or that way because you were a woman. So you don't get to speak as a woman. Well, you can't say that to a transgender. because that's not allowed. We don't make the rules. We wouldn't make such silly rules. But they create their own rules, which on page 86 are very different from the rules on page 23.
Now, that would be a title for a book, and it should be about the left. Who makes the rules?
Well, because you, again...
Who makes these judgments?
When you have, you know, you in California, by law, you can't use the wrong pronoun.
Mm-hmm.
You have all of the
in
language
certain,
can be...
In certain areas.
Right.
Of employment.
The language, the how things are handled had to become law. That's the point where the government is saying, okay, you must use this in this setting. This is the pronoun you must use in this setting. How bizarre is that thinking? Well, then you have another group that is, again, you know, we'll go back to the Heritage Foundation and that discussion, that panel. Someone who was on the Baltimore Mayor's commission as a lesbian called a man. This is a man who said he identifies as a woman. He was sent to a female prison, and then he was charged and convicted of rape. A convicted rape. But no, she used violent language and was kicked off the panel, was kicked off the commission.
By calling him a him?
Yes. You can't do that.
And she said that was a worse crime in the minds
right.
of many people
right.
on the left
mm-hmm.
than the fact that he raped women.
Right.
That's where you are. And that story was told at that panel discussion.
Mm-hmm. Right.
From the liberal feminists. I mean, it's just a bizarre world right now. It really is.
It is.
And thank goodness we get to do talk radio. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Yeah, so the latest is from TMZ, Jussie Smollett's Empire Screen Time.
Mm-hmm.
That's the show that he's on. Is getting slashed in the wake of the growing sentiment that he staged the so-called attack. Production scenes, or sources tell TMZ, Jussie was supposed to have 9 scenes and a big musical number in the second-to-last episode, which is being shot now. But 5 of his scenes have been cut, and his musical number has been axed. As for the remaining 4 scenes, we're told he's no longer the focus. The scene features an ensemble, meaning he's flanked by a number of his cast members. With his duties pared down, Jussie will be spending way less time on the set. Instead of working every day this week, we're told he's working Friday and possibly Thursday, and he will not be rehearsing.
TMZ also reporting over the weekend that this case could go to the grand jury as early as today, later Tuesday. And that would be the hoax version of the case, because it's illegal to file a false police report. We don't know. Again, this is TMZ citing their sources on these stories. And so far, that's essentially what we have. But I don't know of any major media group right now that is not reporting the hoax side of it.
No.
They were reluctant outside of the Chicago area. They were reluctant to even go there except for to talk about how people are responding to the stories of the hoax. They really didn't go full on until we started to see a change. CNN has sources now. CBS, all of them have sources that say that the police are investigating this as a hoax.
TMZ says the law enforcement sources say the focus is presenting evidence that could lead to a felony indictment against Jussie for allegedly filing a false police report. And we wonder if that the felony indictment also whether the feds might get involved in it if it is proven, because that seemed to be where, at least I thought, CBS was going, was that the investigators, the FBI, which is looking at the actual racist letter that was sent to him, possibly came from the brothers, since they reported that they took a magazine and stamps. And it's important to understand the magazine, that the racist letter that was sent, the letters that were used were from a magazine.
Right. And if they sent that through the mail, that's a federal crime.
Yes.
So, it, again,
with I think the white powder.
Mm-hmm. And I think, too, if you look at this, the timeline that we said leaving here on Friday morning, that we'll know if they're investigating this as a hoax in the next 24 to 48 hours. And we learned that just hours later. I think we're also going to know if that's true. I think the police are probably going to issue a statement. Or does this go to a grand jury, which means, of course, they are looking at it possibly as a hoax.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning. Thank you so much for being here. Well, yesterday afternoon, New York, California, and 14 other states sued the Trump administration. The litigation brought before a federal trial court in the Northern District of California. I think the president predicted that, seeks an injunction to prevent the president from shifting billions of dollars from military construction to the border without explicit congressional approval. The suit also asks the court to declare Trump's actions illegal, arguing that Trump showed a flagrant disregard of fundamental separation of powers principles ingrained in the United States Constitution by violating the Constitution's presentment and appropriations clauses, which govern federal spending. The litigation additionally includes allegations that Trump is violating the National Environmental Policy Act by building a wall that could impact the environment without first completing the necessary environmental impact statements. Now, that would be an interesting, that'll be interesting to see if the court rules on that one, if they get to that point. Because if the court finds that the national emergency is legit, do environmental policy things count at all?
Procedurally, they could. You could then, the court could say, because if, let's say, any of the courts, federal courts along the way, said that they violated the act by not doing the environmental impact study, then you can correct that by going back and doing the study.
Well, I guess my point would be, if it's a national emergency, the president calls a national emergency because troops are crossing the border. Mm-hmm. So the troops have to go down there immediately, and you need to build a temporary wall. At that point, when you call a national emergency, a lot of things fall away, depending on how serious a national emergency is. That would be my point, and that's the point we brought up, for example, with eminent domain. If you call a national emergency, do you even have to issue eminent domain, or do you just go to seizure of the property because it's a national emergency? Eminent domain applies to when it's a policy issue that Congress states is in the best interest of the people, and therefore we are building the wall. It's of great public interest. Therefore, we can do eminent domain. You still have to go through the process. Can the president avoid that process completely?
The court precedent on the eminent domain side is there. With Taft Hartley,
I've heard that the steel mill is viewed as different because it's not eminent domain. Again, I'm not arguing the point. I'm just stating
it's seizure of property, but
it's a different seizure of property because we're talking about private property and not a commercial entity. I was reading that a little while ago in one blog saying, I don't necessarily buy that argument.
Right.
And I don't buy that argument of eminent domain.
Could a ranch owner also be seen as a commercial venture? A ranch is a commercial venture if it's a working ranch.
That's a good point, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, you can make that point. The thing is here, there are so many unknowns,
mm-hmm.
because you can make, you, as we said, with the whole steel mill, of nationalizing the steel mill, there was a strike going on,
mm-hmm.
and by seizing it, you could make the workers go back to work.
Well, and that was part of the concern. What their big concern seemed to be at that time, Congress was in putting Taft-Hartley together. Congress was considering an amendment to it to allow for the seizure of property, but their great concern overall was the fact that this would have such a negative effect on collective bargaining. And so the ability to strike would go away if any given president could walk in and say, sorry, we need you to do this job. And, of course, for wartime, you could actually make the case. You can see the imminent danger and situation in terms of national defense. But there was a great consideration for how it would impact collective bargaining because of the strike.
Well, I guess the other point is, since the 1976 congressional law
mm-hmm.
that gives the president certain abilities, does that at all take away, or has that ever been tested to be able to take away the court's decision for the steel mills? And would that be different today? Because if Congress came in and said, we're at wartime, we need your plants now.
Mm-hmm.
That if it wasn't just the executive branch doing it,
we need to build a wall now.
Or we need to build a wall now. Mm-hmm. Right. It's same thing. You know, could the president do that? And again, I don't know. That's where the whole gray area is. And there's a ton of gray area in the 1976, declaration that Congress gave the president the ability to do certain things when he calls a national emergency.
Mm-hmm.
But the gray area is here that even if you look at the steel mill and say, well, the steel mill might be viewed differently under the 1976 law because we were actually fighting a war,
mm-hmm.
which you could say is something that is acute and happened. We went to war. The war is going on. Clear and present danger. Congress has approved the funding of this war. We need to have the materials to do it. And so under the 1976 Act, if this thing came, could Congress at that or could the president at this point do that because it was acute and a war? Well, this isn't an acute and a war that Congress has declared in any way.
Right.
And that's why I say there's so many gray areas here that you just don't have any idea how the courts would rule on it. And so many things are being brought into it. You have the one lawsuit, which is saying there's a separation of powers here, and we'll see how the initial courts, how they will rule on that one.
Right.
The violation of the Constitution's presentment and appropriations clauses, which means who gets to spend that money and how do you do it? Precisely the environmental law. I don't know. I don't know what the courts will do on that one. And the other one is what we said early on about the confiscation of private property. How would that be done? Would it be an eminent domain process that the administration would work under, or can they just say, no, we want the property? Now, I doubt you would do that because of the public opinion. We're just going to take your property and we're going to do it under technically a true national emergency because of wartime. From what I know, the president could temporarily, at least, you know, during the war, it may have to be given back to you after the war is over.
Mm-hmm.
But to seize and use your property at that point, certainly the president could do in wartime under a national emergency.
Right.
Before Congress could rule on something like that, because the president would have to act immediately if it was an acute problem. The Mexican army is crossing the border at this point. The troops are going to be down there. We need to build a wall. It's going on your property. You have no say anymore.
Right.
Now, the other point is the military is down there, and that's the military part of the law with the military construction.
Yes. And it's going to get into because the lawsuits, even if Congress came in and they agreed with the president on building the wall, They could then, by legal precedent, use eminent domain, but then you're still going to have your lawsuits because it's going to be a challenge.
Yes.
About where the border is versus where it would be feasible to put a wall. You can't put a wall in a ravine. You're not going to put it in the middle of the Rio Grande. You're going to, there's going to have to be solid ground for that wall, which of course is going to be clearly on American soil and in some cases on private land. So that's where that eminent domain thing, I don't know that if there is an eminent domain case that didn't have some kind of legal challenge to it on a major level, the mm-hmm. major cases, when you're talking about a considerable amount of property.
And that would be my point, and this is a part of it that I don't, again, we can go back to the eminent domain or seizure, whatever you wish to call it, of the attempt of the steel plants. And then the question would be, well, how did the 1976 law precisely change that, and how does it affect it in this case where Congress has not appropriated any money for any military mission that is at the border at the moment? And then at that point, is there a point that the courts would say and monitor where the courts would say the president can do this, but they can't seize your property? It has to be eminent domain. I don't see the courts going to that particular point. I do think at that point they'll make a decision one way or another. Because at some point, unless they plan to only build, because this would be interesting, because what precisely would they evolve it to say, we're only going to build the wall on, we want this money, the $8 billion, just to build the wall on federal property? Or would it still be the continuation of what they're looking to do eminent domain on Texas landholders, for example?
Mm-hmm.
And then does that change from eminent domain to confiscation of property? At that point, that's where I believe you have a big challenge.
Right.
Because under wartime, yes, but is this wartime?
Yeah, what rises to the point of a national emergency?
What makes it a national emergency where you don't have to be involved in eminent domain and you can go to just seizure of the land?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because if you wish to expedite it quickly and get that wall built now, well, then you're not going to go through the eminent domain process. And I don't even know if the administration has the legal right to go through the eminent domain process. So if they don't have that legal right, then do they have the right of confiscation? And how does the 76 law relate to the attempt on the steel mills way back when?
Mm-hmm.
And I can't tell you. I don't know.
So, right.
I suspect that in a week we'll be on to other topics.
I don't
because
see this
will be in the court.
Yeah, I don't see this fast tracking in the courts. If they agreed, if there was a push to fast track it, and they agreed to, because I guess what is actionable by a federal court? I mean, it just depends on where they come out in terms of right now, the president, the administration started a wall that's going to be, 6 miles long? Has nothing to do with the declaration of national emergency. But certainly there's going to be federal judge after federal judge, which is why these 16 states, by the way, went to the Ninth Circuit.
Did you hear what
Maine? To halt any action whatsoever, and what all could that include, and how long would that happen? Or I guess how long would that be in play if this isn't going to be expedited and fast-tracked to the top court, to the highest court? It could be years.
Well, you see, for example, what Maine charged. Maine is aggrieved by the actions of the defendants and has standing to bring this action because of the injury to the state and its residents. You're thinking, Maine? What are you talking about? Is the injury to the state and its residents caused by defendants' reduction of federal defense spending in Maine due to diversion of funding to the border wall, end of quote.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're saying defense spending will be fewer dollars in their state. They are damaged because that was appropriated by Congress, and the money that would come to Maine, whatever portion of that is, mm-hmm. is damaged to the state.
Well, and that deals with the appropriation side, which we said, okay, there's a totally different battle in and of itself legally. is what does the president have available to him in terms of funding? I mean, right now, even outside of the declaration of national emergency, we asked that question in December when Sarah Huckabee Sanders said we're going to look to all of these secretaries of each department, and we're going to ask them to find funding there. That went on for about, what, 48 hours? Not even? Because the question was, wait a minute, why didn't you do that before? If you knew this was available, why didn't you do this a year ago, 2 years ago? And so when it comes to appropriations, I think that's going to be one of the many issues here, probably a couple of dozen different issues when you break it down legally. Because it will come down to the procedural issue, the whole environmental impact study. Well, does that apply in a national emergency or not? Those are the questions that they're going to have to answer all along the way. That's why I think there are so many tentacles to this thing. I don't see it hitting the high courts for at least a couple of years.
866-90-RED-EYE.
India traditionally has been one of the strongest export customers for U.S. pulses, particularly chickpeas and lentils. Yet tariffs and market price supports on those and other pulses have impacted U.S. export opportunities in the Indian market. USDA economic researcher Travis Miner noted such impact last May.
For dry peas and lentils specifically, it's down to almost 10% of what it was a year previously to just India, which is a huge, huge drop-off for that market.
That's led the U.S., joined by Canada, to submit a counter-notification in the World Trade Organization Committee on Agriculture on India's market price supports for five specific pulses, suggesting in the announcement Friday that India exceeded allowable levels of trade-distorting domestic support. Discussion on the U.S.-Canadian counter-notification is expected when the WTO Committee on Ag next meets at the end of this month. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The USDA report is sponsored by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel and Shell Rotella.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio, 866-90-RED-EYE. One of the things we're going to do following the bottom of the hour is just give people an example of national emergencies that are in effect right now that were that were called under presidents. So you can understand what national emergencies, and all of them over the last, 39 years. There's national emergencies now that still are in effect that Congress has never rescinded that all still exist today, just so you can see the nature of what national emergencies have been, over the last 39 years. Mm-hmm. And the vast majority are targeting other nations.
Right. Yeah, Congress could in this case, it would have to be a veto-proof majority. They could rescind it with a joint resolution. That's not going to happen. They're not going to get the votes. They don't have the votes to get to a veto-proof majority on something like that. But you had a couple of lawmakers say, well, we're going to be introducing a joint resolution. It's not going to go anywhere. I mean, they may even get to a vote on it, but it's not going to be to the point of a veto-proof majority vote. They don't have the votes to get that done.
No, they from what I saw Jim Jordan yesterday, they don't have the votes to do it. So this will be in the courts.
Yes.
That's where it will be resolved.
And because I think there are so many moving parts, I think it could be in the courts for a long time. And as you said, it could get to the highest court, and they say, well, first of all, we're not going to decide on either part of it, which would be likely the defining what a national emergency is. They may decide on something procedural, but there are so many moving parts to this. I don't think you're going to get this. I don't think you're going to see this decided at the highest court anytime soon. Here's your forecast.
Most of the Tuesday will be quiet across the nation. The Northeast, Mid-Atlantic, Midwest, most of the South. Northern Plains and West Coast have calmed down. We will see some snow in the Central Rockies from Denver down through central New Mexico. There are some rain showers on the Texas coast, south of Houston, and then extending over toward New Orleans. And it'll be that system you'll want to watch for some icing from central Texas into the state of Oklahoma and over to portions of northern Arkansas. And by this time tomorrow, we'll see heavy rain extending from New Orleans up through the lower Tennessee Valley. By the time you get into the central Illinois, Ohio, and Indiana area, we will pick up some potential icing, primarily between I-70 and I-80 from the Illinois border back into the mid-Atlantic. Look for winter weather advisories to be connected with that system tomorrow. There's a look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Right Wing Machine, Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
The Right Wing Machine?
Stop it. Can we get something from Deep Voice Guy that actually relates to what we do?
The Right Wing Machine.
All right, so where is the Jussie Smollett case going? You want to know where it's going?
Mm.
Listen to this audio cut from Al Sharpton. Mm. From yesterday morning.
We should come with all that we can come with in law enforcement to find out what happened, and the guilty should suffer the maximum. I still maintain that. And if it is found that Smollett and these gentlemen did in some way perpetrate something that is not true, they ought to face accountability to the maximum.
There you go.
Yep.
TMZ reporting that he is losing parts of the last one of the last episodes.
They're actually filming it this week. It takes roughly on the average about 8 days to film one episode of a TV series, and they're filming this second to the last episode of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And his scenes have been cut down, the number of scenes, including one that's a musical scene. And they say the musical scene is completely cut out, and that the scenes that remain with him in it are with an ensemble cast, which means he's blending in with the other actors and characters in the show. And that also means that he's not going to be on the set as much this week because, well, those scenes won't be required. He won't be required to act in them. If you and I talked during the pre-show meeting off the air talking about the company or the 20th Century Fox and their statement that they issued last week.
Yes.
Before we learned what we learned on Friday, saying, you know, they stand behind the actor in terms of him being written off the show, his character being written off the show. They said no. He's a central character to the show, and he's not being written off. If there are charges against him, and there's a legal case against him, it's going to be hard for Fox to keep him, at least keep the character as a pivotal or central character to that program.
TMZ also reporting that their sources inside the police department say that their goal is to get as much information to see if they can get a felony charge to the grand jury,
right,
of filing a false crime.
Right.
The other thing is to CBS Chicago, as we talked about earlier, where they were talking about the motivation behind him to do this was that he did not get the reaction from the hate crime letter that was sent with white powder to the studios where they film in Chicago.
Right.
and he didn't. The outrage didn't seem to be there. The interesting thing that they also note, though, without tying one to the other, but in the next paragraph, is that police confiscated a magazine and stamps from the two brothers' place where they were living.
Mm-hmm.
Which I said, are they trying to imply that the police are going down the road that they believe that Jussie Smollett and the two brothers actually concocted that letter and put the powder inside of the envelope and sent it to the studios? Because the FBI is investigating that portion.
Right.
Because it went through the U.S. mail. That's a whole different ballgame at that point. You're beyond just, filing a false charge
right.
at that point.
Right. Yeah, that's a federal crime. That would be a big deal. And if TMZ's sources are correct that this could go to a grand jury as early as today,
yeah.
later today, and it's moving that quickly, I wouldn't be surprised to see Smollett and his lawyers try and work something out. I that would be your move, right?
Mm-hmm.
Try and keep him out of jail. If you're his lawyer and it's not looking good for your client, you're looking to make a deal.
Other news, it looks like, because at 10 p.m. on Monday night, CBS said that Bernie Sanders would be on CBS this morning.
All right.
For a revealing interview.
Revealing. Okay.
Now, unless he wants to talk about the shirtless honeymoon and what exactly happened at that filming in the former Soviet Union, if it's a revealing interview, it's probably that he plans on running for president again.
Yeah, right.
I really hope that that's what it is.
Yes. We don't need anything else revealing from him.
No, we definitely do not.
No.
In other news, what a zoo this is turning into. Andrew McCabe and the interview on 60 Minutes. We asked the question Thursday night, Friday morning's show. We said they won't be doing their jobs. You can call Scott Pelley a political hack if he doesn't ask. The most important question is, what is the actual evidence? What's the actual evidence of a crime that you had? McCabe goes through the fact of why they started the investigation, why they discussed using the 25th Amendment against the president, why Rosenstein was thinking about wearing a wire and trying to get the president to say something. None of them know what he would have said, because the only evidence that got everything started was Trump's own words, where Trump told Comey, look, I wish you'd lay off of Michael Flynn. Well, that's not going to send you anywhere, because you know Michael Flynn. You heard the conversation. You taped him.
Yep.
You know what he did. You know he didn't do anything. Otherwise, he would be up on more than just lying to federal investigators.
Mm-hmm.
You know he didn't do anything. He's not testifying against Trump. There's nothing that he has. You know that, and you knew that back then. And the other one was what? The other one was the fact that he went to Rosenstein and said, I think in your memo where you are writing up that it's justified to fire Comey, I want you to put in there Russia. Rosenstein refused, and they said that was what made them think that Trump, that they needed to discuss the 25th Amendment.
Yeah.
Because Trump had said, I want you to put that in the memo. Rosenstein didn't put it in the memo. But as we said, the fact that Trump did that would give you an indication. Well, wait a minute. If I'm trying to hide the fact that I colluded with Russia, the last thing I'm going to do is tell when I talk to my attorney general or my deputy attorney general, and he says, look, what I'm going to do here is I'm going to suggest that you fire him, but you fire him for these reasons. And then you have the discussion. You say, well, what about, if you're trying to hide it as president, you don't have the discussion. You go, oh, good, you didn't mention Russia. I'm just going to be quiet on that one because that won't bring attention to it. So if you were actually guilty, you wouldn't want him to mention Russia. You and I have talked about this with Comey and with McCabe, and it seemed, I'll just go with Comey and McCabe right now. It seems like none of them had an investigator's mind. It's almost as if they were emotional politicians. Emotional bureaucrat politicians is what they were. That's how they reacted. Because to me, seasoned investigators don't act like this. You and I always talked about Comey, how everything seemed to be odd, how he viewed investigations seemed to be odd, how he viewed the situation that he was in. He just viewed it as not being an investigator, but more of a politician.
Yeah, and that's it. But then beyond the normal political mode, it became an activist political mode.
Yes.
They really, and you listen to what Comey may have said on Capitol Hill, the times he was testifying on Capitol Hill, and the way he gave his answers. But then the bizarre book. We asked the question when Comey released his book, why now? Shouldn't you wait a little bit on the book because of things that could come down?
Yeah.
Well, now that you look at McCabe's book, you know, and what we know of it and the interview from 60 Minutes, it reeks of something where they're both desperate to get ahead of something. They're putting out this narrative in almost a defensive posturing kind of way, where we were justified in all of these things we did. Yet the very basics still don't exist in their storyline.
Every time they open their mouth,
they make it worse.
Yeah. I look at it and say, well, wait a minute. What you're saying is you didn't like what he said.
Right.
Where's the evidence that he colluded with the Russians to hack the election?
Right.
That's what I want. What you're saying is we didn't like the things that he said. And he wished to do something that made me suspicious, but suspicious of what? I have no idea.
Yeah.
There was no underlying crime.
Right.
In fact, well, couldn't he have wanted you to put the fact that you were firing him because of the Russia investigation because he thought it was bogus? Should you have come to any determination either way on Trump's statement on that? Because I can tell you both ways. In fact, I can make a stronger point that if he was guilty, he wouldn't want you to make that a reason for firing. If he actually did collude with the Russians, and he wanted him fired because he thought he was getting too close, and you came to him and said, these are my reasons for firing him, that you can fire him, and it doesn't have to include Russia. Well, if I knew I colluded with the Russians, I don't want to include that in there, because I want to make it seem like we're firing him for something that has nothing to do with my collusion.
Right.
So what is the actual evidence that Trump colluded? That question not asked.
Nope.
As we said the other day. By the way, quickly, you and I just going through the different 31 national emergencies.
Mm-hmm. It's like being in a Baskin-Robbins.
The what?
It's like being in a Baskin-Robbins.
Almost all of them have to do with blocking property of people from foreign countries that we have problems with. Trump, three of them. One in November, blocking the property of certain persons contributing to the situation in Nicaragua, imposing certain sanctions in the event of foreign interference in a United States election, mm-hmm. Blocking the property of persons involved in serious human rights abuse, corruption. Right. And that's worldwide, by the way. That's to block their property in the United States, for example. Under Obama, the same thing. Blocking property of certain persons contributing to the situation in Burundi, blocking the property of certain persons engaged in significant malicious cyber-enabled activities. So you could do it if somebody in North Korea blocks us or somewhere else does whatever. You can block their property. You can seize it. You can freeze it or whatever. And the vast majority is doing that. And so when you get into something like this, where you're actually dealing with American citizens, with all the precedent over the last 39 years, I can't find anything that's close to being similar to what the president has called a national emergency on, which is going to be a problem.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. There are, if you go back to the oldest one that's in effect, it's actually from Jimmy Carter, blocking Iranian government property. Well, his friend Barack Obama changed that a little bit.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, he did that.
Yeah. Wow. It is, it is very different in nature. The declaration of the emergency, I guess, does it tell us anything about that side of it itself? If you look at the 31 or look at any of the other ones that are no longer in effect, there are 31 others that are in effect right now. This would be the 32nd, the one that the president issued the other day. What can those others tell us about the president's power to do this and what constitutes, again, a national emergency?
866-90-RED-EYE.
How are you treating your truck this winter? Stay prepared by treating your fuel with the proper additives. The most commonly used additives help decrease fuel gelling during colder months, but certain additives can benefit your truck in a number of ways. Cetane boosters can help boost your fuel's cetane rating, which improves the ignition quality of the fuel. This means your fuel will burn faster and result in a smoother and quieter running engine, as well as quicker engine starts. If you're dealing with damage to fuel pumps and injectors, use a detergent additive, which can help dissolve harmful deposits that form on these critical parts of the truck. Whether you're trying to combat fuel gelling or boost your cetane rating, an additive may be just what you need. Stop into a TA truck service near you to shop our selection of cold weather additives today.
This report is a service of Shell Rotella.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So, as I read over the weekend, how does an old white man run for president?
We'll learn later on CBS this morning.
No, excuse me. Run for president in the Democrat Party, Bernie's supposed to announce today. Yeah. And the response was... very carefully.
Yeah, right. Well, it will be interesting to see, and we'll play some audio from it on tomorrow's show, to see exactly what he says about today's issues. What are those issues? What is he looking to get done beyond what we already know?
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.